Hi, and welcome to the How Not to Think podcast, a podcast that gets you thinking about your thinking. I'm Dr. Howard Rankin, and today I'm delighted to have me all the way from sunny and sometimes very hot UK, England, Kevin Stansfield. Kevin qualified as a chartered accountant. Subsequently working with owner-run businesses and helping them to grow successfully. After completing an MBA in 2006, he had a change of direction with the aim of focus more on business planning, growth, and development. He's currently a coach, and for the last 13 years has been coaching and training business owners to excel at growing and running their businesses so that they can make more money and have more time to enjoy it. We'll find out a lot more about that. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Howard. It's great to be here.
Yeah, good, yes. And I was sharing with Kevin before we started recording that in my youth growing up, I lived in the UK and my grandmother lived in the same county, Hampshire, that Kevin works in. So we were just sharing a bit of notes about the south coast of Britain. Not a bad place to live, actually, is it?
It's pretty good. Certainly this time of year, it's when we can't quite cope with the real heat. So we had it in, I think, the hottest day on record in the UK, about 40 degrees. And the trains stopped running, airplanes stopped running. I mean, everywhere in the world can cope with it. But the UK, yeah, we have the wrong rain, the wrong sun, the wrong snow. So, but when it's in the middle bit, then it's been lovely today. So mid-20s,
nice.
But we are in a bit of a drought at the moment. We haven't had rain for a good 2 months. So,
oh my gosh,
everything's a little
oh
bit brown
my
at
gosh.
The moment.
Oh
which for
my
the UK, no rain for 2 months.
I remember one June in probably, I think I was an early adult. One June, I don't think we saw the sun the whole month. There was some
right.
weather system, you know, and it rained like virtually every day.
Yeah.
Well, talk about bringing the sun out and making life sunny for business owners. Your trajectory here is interesting. And, you know, as I said, tell us a little bit about how you get to be where you are today.
So I suppose my journey to where I am, yeah, you know, it was never planned, but it sort of started. I think the seed was sown when both my parents started businesses when I was in my early sort of teens. Mum started a printing business from the front room. My dad gave up a very well paid job. He was the finance director of a local business, and he bought a business from a man in a pub. As you do, because I think he wanted to be in control of his own destiny, and he didn't want to work for the idiot boss, so he decided to work for a complete lunatic, you know, himself. And so I was sort of brought up as a, you know, as a young kid, with the sort of excitement of what we sort of thought were entrepreneurs, but looking back, they weren't entrepreneurs; they were just good people trying to make a living. Doing it their way, yeah, as you say, you know, in an unconventional way to do that for most people. And you know, I remember sort of back then that it was all very exciting, you know, but work very quickly took over their lives. So my dad would be sort of, you know, off to work very early in the morning. You know, when he had a job, he would be back at 5:30. We'd all sit and eat dinner together. When he had a business, he was home late. He was working weekends, very stressed out. And so that was about 5-6 years of that. And I was about to leave school. I think, as every dad does, they want the son to come and work for the family business. And I just looked at it and thought, you know, why the hell would I want to come and work for you? You know, you work in too many hours. You know, having a business looks like a pile of rubbish to me. So I went into accountancy. Was qualified. That was down in Kent, sort of southeast England. So I moved along the coast for work. Went into practice with my goal at that time was to become a partner in a small, medium-sized accountancy practice. And at the age of 28, that was there waiting for me. I was ready to sign the partnership agreement. And I thought, I don't want to be here. You know, the goal that I set myself sort of 4 years ago, I no longer want anymore. So I jumped ship and went in to work for one of my clients. We built their business up to about 4 million turnover in about 4 years. Had a great fun doing it, fourth generation business. And then took it from 4 million back to half a million in 3 months. So we learned a lot of lessons in that process as well, 50 staff, letting them go. And then that got me involved with a Dutch company. I became a freelance finance director, working for about five or six companies, grew a couple of those to multi-millions, had a blast gambling with other people's money. It's great playing with other people's money. When it's your own, it's completely different.
Yeah.
But once they got to sort of, you know, 30, 40 million, they became a little bit, for me, boring. You know, everything took ages to make decisions. Everything was slow. I lost that dynamicness of, you know, a small business in that growth phase. And also, we'd grown all these businesses. By that stage, my father's business had gone pop back in the mid-90s. And he was a very intelligent guy. And I thought, well, hang on a minute. Why? How does an intelligent guy like my dad work in his business for 15 years and then have nothing at the end of it? Yet some of these people I was working with were no better than him, in some cases worse, you know, that had managed to build multi-million pound businesses and be financially very successful. So I thought, well, where do you go and learn how to do that? And the only place I knew at the time was to go back to university to do my master of business, my MBA. And that sort of answered a few questions, but it was very much from a big corporate place. So once you're a big corporate, this is what you do. There was nothing on the transition from small into large. And at that point, I bumped into Action Coach, which is the world's largest coaching organization. We're in 80 odd countries around the world, about 1,500, 2,000 coaches. And the guy who founded it was a serial entrepreneur, started really when he was 19, had bought and sold many businesses by the time he was 25. So he'd actually learned how to take a business from being small into something that is sellable. And I just, for me, just sort of, you know, blew my mind with this systemized approach, but it not so much that the system, you know, the business fits the system fits the business. And I thought, well, with my experience of businesses, you know, in accountancy and finance from the parents' point of view, you know, I could bring all of that experience along with a tried and tested mythology to actually help businesses. And that was some 17 years ago. And I've been, I've helped over 300 businesses sort of during those years. Some have sold for multi-millions. Others have just got better than where they were. And a few I've actually got out of their business because their business was never going to get them to where they wanted to be. So they had to make a complete change of tact. So.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. I wonder from your experience, how many people who are starting their businesses or have a small business really understand what they need to do to grow their business? I mean, what's, I'm sure it goes across a continuum, right?
Very, very, very few. I mean, I think I can it to, you know, I don't have kids, but people sort of say when you have kids, no one gives you the rule book, you know, the right, how to. Right, you make, and so every parent makes it up when they start. You know, every business owner makes it up when they start. You know, no one, you don't have to go on a 5-day course to learn how to run a business. You know, darn good idea to go and do that. At least read a book about it, you know, if nothing else. But so everyone sort of, you know, jumps into it with a view that, you know, they want to make something. And, you know, certain aspects of business are actually quite simple. You know, you've got to go and get some sales. You know, you've got to understand your numbers. You've got to deliver what you promise. And eventually you need to recruit some people. But the sad fact, and I see stats sort of, you know, all over the place, but I never believe anything. I need to research it myself. So I research in the UK, and I'm led to believe it's the same in the States and everyone else in the world, that of all the limited companies, the actual, you know, what I would call proper businesses, not the sort of self-employed, but where it's an actual limited company, 98% of limited companies in the UK employ less than 10 people and turn over less than £1 million. Right. So that to me suggests that 98% of the businesses out there, you know, have got to a certain stage and they can't get beyond that, because anyone can start a business and get it to be profitable and make some money through sheer bloody determination. And you need that. It's like rocket fuel to get the rocket out of the atmosphere. You need to have that. You need to prove your model. And, you know, anyone that thinks that making money in a business is easy, you know, it's not. You've got to be able to put that effort in. But then taking it from that sort of sub-million into a, you know, a multi-million pound business where you've got people working for you, where you work less in the business, and you know, you can be sort of be thinking more strategically, you know, less than 2% of businesses get to that point. And that's the sad fact. And Michael Gerber, you probably read Michael Gerber's book, The E-Myth. You know, he sort of said that there's this entrepreneur myth that businesses are started by entrepreneurs. The reality is they're not. They're started by technicians, the people who are good at the job that they deliver, and managers, people like my dad who managed another business and bought a business, bought a franchise, and bought into something else. So, and only about sort of less than 5%, and I think it's much less than that, it's about 1%, of what he would call true entrepreneurs, those people like, you know, in the UK, Alan Sugar, Richard Branson, Elon Musk, you know, these visionaries who, you know, have this ability to sort of see the opportunity, you know, far bigger than anyone else. And those are sort of like, they're the unicorns to find people like that.
So. Yeah. Yeah, rather than the zebras, right? Isn't it the unicorns and the zebras? Yeah, and I think that's true. I was watching an interesting video the other day on the difference between strategy and planning, and I thought that was really interesting. Anyone can say, "Oh well, I'm planning to do this, and I'm planning to do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that," but that is not necessarily strategy. Mm. Your strategy is, why are you doing that? You know, what's the point? What's the system behind it? What's the dynamic? Oh, yes, we're going to build a new plant in wherever. Well, why? What's the purpose of that? You know, and it was very interesting. He was going through a variety of different, actually was in the car industry comparing Tesla with what some of the other big manufacturers are saying, and was able to show quite convincingly that Tesla had a strategy. All these other companies were just had planning. Oh, we're going to open this. We're going to make so many cars. We're going to do this. Okay. Yeah. But, you know, Tesla's plan was start with some high level small ones, get the market going, so then we can fund medium level at a much greater market. You know, and that was actual strategy of this is what we're going to do, not just, oh, we're going to employ more people. We're going to make more things or what have you, unless it's tied to some philosophy of why that is actually going to work, might not work. And I suspect you see that quite a lot with small business people.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, what you said, I think you can put that at many levels. And it's I'd be sometimes careful about, you know, that sort of small business and big business, because, you know, Tesla is a big business, but it's a small business that's big. Go back to that. And it goes back to that thinking that the problem with big business, and I found this when, you know, when I was sort of, you know, taking them to sort of multi-millions, is the mindset changes in it's a fear of loss. We don't want to lose market share. We don't want to go backwards. It's been hard to get to where we are, and therefore, you know, we don't take the risks that we did when we were a small business. Now, Tesla is still taking risks because, you know, they've got a complete nutter that's running it who doesn't really care, you know. And you need an element of that bravado, I think, to, that entrepreneurial sort of, to hell with it. Let's just, as Branson says, screw it, let's do it. You need that. But the more that you have, the harder it is sometimes to do that. And that's what I find with a lot of that sub-million turnover businesses is they get to a point where, their goal when they started the business was to create some security, financial security, to do something they enjoy doing, and, have the autonomy to do it their way. So that was their goal when they started the business. Now, it generally takes about 5 years, that 10,000 hours to achieve mastery of anything. So after about 5 years, most businesses get to a point where the business owner has now replaced their income as an employee with an income from the business, and they become okay. They're doing all right. They're working 40 or 50 hours a week, which is the same as they would be in corporate. They're earning 50 to 100,000, income, which is what they would have in corporate. They don't necessarily have 5 weeks holiday a year. Probably don't have personal health and things like that. But they have, they have this perceived flexibility to work when they want to work. The reality, though, is they're working far more than they would do if they had a job. So they're okay. So that then the thought of then taking that, let's say, half a million pound business and turn it into a £2 million business, suddenly their brain then goes, geez, if I'm going to be twice the size as I am, I'm going to have to work twice as hard. I'm going to have to risk all of that I've built up to get to that next level. So the thinking, the strategy thing goes out the window and they go back to short-term planning. Let's plan for the next 90 days rather than thinking, right, if I'm going to double, triple, let's go 10 times the size of this business, what would I do? And that's the first thing that I do with all of my clients is we sit down and we work at where do they want to be in generally 5 to 10 years, because that's about as far as most people can think. And a lot of people I'm dealing with are in their 40s, 50s anyway, because so they're now starting thinking, right, well, I want to be able to retire at some stage. We look at that and say, right, well, if you want to retire on the amount of money you're earning now, so let's say it was 50,000, it's not massive, you have a reasonable lifestyle at 50, but so if you wanted to retire on that, you would need to have invested around about £1 million of assets to generate roughly 5% return to give you 50K. Yeah, it works pretty much in the UK, around the world, doesn't matter what it is. So where's your plan as you sit now at 40, 50 years old, to have £1 million of invested assets that are generating you a minimum of 5% return? And they give you this sort of blank look. Well, I've got a bit of a pension, and I own my own house. Great. That's better than most people. But it's not enough. Well, my business is my asset. Well, who's going to come and pay you $1 million for a business that you have to work 50 hours a week in, that makes you 50,000, that gives you more headaches than you can think of? No one's going to buy that business off you. At best, you'll probably make 250,000 from it. And I'm helping clients at the moment buy businesses, and we're going to these people, and they're crazy. I had one today. It's made £100,000 last year, and he wants £3 million for it. So, I need £3 million. Well, it's not what you need; it's what the business is worth. So that's that lack of knowledge, because people haven't bought and sold businesses. You go to private equity guys, they just reel these numbers off the top of their heads, but they're not interested in buying these businesses because they're too small. They want them when they're 5, 10, making £1 million profit, because they'll invest in them then and sell them in 5 years' time and make 10 million, because it's the same amount of work you put into it to make go from 1 to 10 million as it is from 100,000 to a million. So why would you mess around at that small market? So the small business owners are therefore a bit left to their own devices. And that's why I chose to do what I do, because, you know, that was my parents were that, all the people that I'd worked with in my accountancy days, was to help them through that transition from small business into big business, but understand that it's not about working harder, it's working smarter. It's understanding what you need to do to get from A to B.
And, you know, it's just been so fascinating to me. I mean, I've been victim of it, you know, my own, I've done the same thing. And I see a lot of people, particularly people who think they're smart, but they're in other businesses, like physicians. I've seen so many physicians start businesses that are, you know, that are outside healthcare, that are absolutely outside their, and they don't know what the hell they're doing. I mean, you know, and just because you're smart doesn't make you a good business person. It just doesn't. Yeah. And, you know, I'm fairly smart, but I screwed up. You know, I didn't know what I was doing. Didn't have any sense of strategy or planning or anything that made any sense. And I'm sure there's a gazillion people like that that probably you don't get to see, because they go out of business before they.
Well, that's it. The only people that write books are the people that have actually made it. You know, there's a lot of unwritten books out there of people that haven't. So, but even the people that have made it, you know, they'll always say that, you know, what they managed to do was fail fast.
Yes,
you know, that's they, right. You know, people like Richard Branson, you know, probably made more mistakes in the first 5 years than most people will make in their entire lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But each mistake, you know, actually he learned from that, and that drove him on to the next level. And that's where that comfort zone kicks in, is when you're comfortable, you don't want to make mistakes. And therefore you don't try, you don't push, therefore you don't learn. You know, it's like a muscle. If you don't work a muscle and it doesn't ache, well, it's not going to get stronger.
No, you're exactly right. And life is about adaptation and learning in a whole variety of different situations. And this is no different. It's exactly the same. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, you know, the books and wherever, it's just full of stories of ultimately successful people who, you know, failed a lot, seemingly failed, but learned from that. And then learn how the way to do it, you know. So, yeah, you're exactly right.
It's that sort of concept of failing forward, you know, failing as long as I was taught, you know, years ago about, you know, as a child, when you're learning to walk, you know, how many times does a child fall over, you know, before it learns to walk? And it's, you know, a lot of people, it's more like the parent is saying, well, look, you've tried to walk 3 times now. You're not getting this, are you? Perhaps you should just be happy being one of life's crawlers. But,
right. And
that's a big thing that, you know, working with a coach, you know, is there to pick you up when you fall over, to say, look, actually, yes, you've got to carry on. This is the right direction. Or actually, no, you've gone down the wrong path here. We need to change tact. Because if you don't know why you failed, you know, and it's a bit like, you know, we sort of met on LinkedIn when I was talking about my book on golf.
Yes.
Is, you know, if you constantly hit the ball right and you don't know why you're hitting it right, then every compensation you make will make it worse.
Right.
Because golf is a law of opposites. You know, if you want to hit it right, you hit it left. If you want to hit it up, you hit it down. If you want to hit it down, you hit it up.
Right.
So if you don't understand the dynamics that's going on, then you're going to start changing things and make it worse. And the worst thing is if you overcome things and you actually sort of manipulate your body and it actually works right, then you convince yourself, if you take the club backwards and whiz it around your head and twid like that and push it through, then it goes straight because it did it once.
Yeah, right.
By luck. And that's what a lot of people in business do. Well, you know, I did this sales, this marketing strategy, it worked once, and therefore I keep repeating it and then wondering why, well, it actually doesn't quite probably work as well as it should do.
Right. Yeah. So, yes, I'm interested to learn more about your golf analogies. You, as you said, you've made that connection between golf and what we've been talking about in terms of business. Tell me a bit more about that and how that came about, and how useful you find it.
And it came about, I think three things. One, the last one was COVID. And so I can't play golf and I couldn't go out. So I thought, well, I might as well write a book. So that was the reason why the book got written. The idea of it sort of, I suppose, came because I use a lot of analogies in my coaching. You know, if this was a game of football, what would we do? And I've got a few clients who are golfers. And also I sort of got into golf about 10, 11 years ago, and I played when I was a kid, had some lessons. I had a reasonable swing but then played once or twice a year for the next 20 years. And then about 10, 11 years ago, I thought, you know, actually I want to get back into this. A lot of my clients were playing and it's a good place to do business as well. Mm-hmm. And, so I thought, right, I'm going to sort of actually go and get some lessons. I'm going to actually do this properly and see if I can get down to be a single figure handicapper. And that journey was, you know, very, very frustrating, very enjoyable. but it was this sort of, you know, and my first book was called, you know, The Big Dipper, that How to Survive the Roller Coaster Ride of Business Ownership. And I was on the similar journey with the golf. You know, I'd have good days where I think I couldn't miss the ball, and then days I couldn't hit the ball. So I was thinking, well, actually, there's a lot of similarities here between, you know, playing a sport, and I chose golf because it's one I could talk about, and sort of the business side of it. And the big thing I came, because, you know, as a business coach, I'm in the market and I'm always looking for good people to work with. But I'm always frustrated with when I phone people up and or connect with on LinkedIn and say, look, I'm a business coach. I help people to grow. Is it something that you're interested in? No, it's not for me. You know, what can you tell me about my business? And it's like, well, you know, with an attitude like that, probably nothing. Right. and then I looked at, you know, golf pros, and I've coached a couple and, you know, being coached by them. And if you take a typical golf club that has, what, 600 members, you know, the golf pro is right in the middle of that community. Everyone knows the golf pro by his or her first name. Yeah. Everyone knows that if they spent some time and money with that golf pro, they would improve their golf. Everybody. There's nobody out there that says golf coaching doesn't work. Yeah. Everybody knows 100% it works. How many people actually use the golf pro?
I don't know. What percent?
10%?
Maybe.
You're lucky?
Yep.
Probably less than that.
Yep.
So why is it then in golf where everyone wants to be better? Because no one comes off a golf course and goes, do you know what? I played so good. Yeah, I never want to play any better than I've just played. Yeah. Everyone wants to be better. Everyone knows that working with a golf coach would help them improve, yet less than 10% improve. Ah, isn't it interesting? 98% of businesses don't go above £1 million.
Right.
Because golfers get into their comfort zone.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the beauty or the unbeauty of the handicap system. Because I can be an 18 handicapper and I can go out and play with a scratch handicapper and I can compete with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I can come round and get to the end of the thing and actually give him a good run for his money because mm-hmm. I've got a better chance of playing less than 18 than he has playing less than scratch.
Right.
Yeah. And so I have this sort of feeling that actually I'm okay. And the thought of going from 18 to 9, oh God, that's hard work, isn't it? I've got to put a lot of effort into that. I'm going to have to pay some money to get better for that. Oh, that seems like too much like hard work. And therefore, they stay as they are. Mm-hmm. Exactly what I said within business.
Right.
You know, people get to that point of being comfortable in their business and go, yeah, I could go to 2 million, but that seems like a lot of hard work. So I'll just stay here. So one of the chapters in the book is about the type of player you are, you know, within golf and within business. And I categorize them into four types. You've got the beginner. Okay, now the beginner's great because the beginner does want to learn. They will go and get lessons. They'll watch YouTube. They'll read books. They'll go and practice because they hate being rubbish. Okay. So same within business. They want to learn. I have no issue. I meet loads of them networking and they're all like sponges. They want to pick my brains. Unfortunately, none of them got any money, so they can't pay for it. So, but that's the sort of the beginner. Then the beginner has to make a decision. Do they actually want to take this up and do it properly? So they become an intermediate. Okay. So they start actually sort of, putting a bit more effort into it to actually sort of, to learn and be better. But at some point they turn from, being that sort of, that intermediate into being a lifestyler. They get to a certain level where it fits their lifestyle. The people I play with are 18 plus or minus 10%. So we have generally a good game. If you're an 18 handicap and all your mates are off scratch,
right?
Yeah. You either wouldn't go out and play with them or you wouldn't stop until you were down to at least single figures.
Mm-hmm.
So you hang around people plus or minus 10%. Same in business. Yeah, people in business, if you've got a small business, we'll hang around small business people. People in big business hang around people in big business. So the people that you're associating with will dictate, subconsciously, the level that you are happy staying at. Because if all your mates are 18 and suddenly you went and had loads of lessons and became a scratch handicapper, you're not going to fit in. And subconsciously, we are pack animals, and therefore we are subconsciously built to actually fit in with the people around us. Mm-hmm. So you're fighting sort of these natural urges to stay as you are if you want to go on that journey. And that's where the fourth level is, which is the master. Somebody who's actually committed to being the best version of themselves they can and will therefore do whatever it takes. And that's when you become a golf pro. You're actually pushing yourself and saying, actually, I want to be better than this. Doesn't matter what level you are, I want to be better. So you're on that journey of consistent, never-ending improvement. And those are the people I generally end up working with is mm-hmm. the people on that journey, which mm-hmm. is the 2%, the 1%ers. I'd love it was the 99%, but, it's generally sort of those 1% who have made that commitment to go, you know what? Yeah, I've got one guy at the moment, he's 10 million turnover, he's 28 years old, and he wants to be 100 million. Why? He doesn't need to. He drives a Lamborghini already. It's like, well, how many more blooming Lamborghinis do you need? He doesn't need it for the trinkets, wants it because it's the Everest he wants to climb.
And if 99% of businesses were successful, you probably wouldn't be in business, right? So, in that sense, it's probably.
I think I would because we'd just be playing at a higher level.
If every
tennis player was good as Federer, then there'll be the 1% who want to be better than Federer.
No, that's true. It's always going to be the case.
It's always going to be another level to play at.
Yeah. And I really like your golf analogy. As somebody who lives in a golf resort, really, we got numerous golf courses here and what have you. I made the decision quite some years ago that, I would have to put in an awful lot of time and effort if I really wanted to improve in this. And I decided I've got more important things to do, but I certainly relate.
Yep.
But I certainly relate to this analogy, because improving your golf game would take a lot of practice, time, effort. Really, like improving any aspect. You want to learn to play a musical instrument, man. You're putting in a lot of time.
Yep.
As you said, 10,000 hours.
10,000 hours.
10,000 hours. A lot.
And I think that's the key to this is, what you said there is there's more important things to me. Now, that's not an issue. And I'd say that to business. Look, if you want to take a business and build a multi-million pound business, you know, you don't have to, but if you want to, it, you can. There's nobody out there that couldn't do it if they wanted to, but you've got to be prepared to put in the time. Yeah, if you want to be, you know, a master pianist, if you want to be a grandmaster chess player, if you want to be good at anything, you know. So, but the key to this, I've always found, is people sort of say that, you know, I'll be happy when I've achieved a goal. I'll be happy when I've done this. Well, I'll be happy when I've done that. No, all of the studies and, you know, my personal experiences, happiness is in the pursuit of the goal, not the attainment of the goal.
No question.
And that's the key, is look, it doesn't matter what you dedicate your life to, but dedicate it to something, you know. Now, for those that have dedicated to golf and are now playing on the LIV Tour, we'll have to talk about that. You know, then, you know, great. You know, you've focused. For those who want to dedicate to business, great. If it's dedicated to the family, great. If it's dedicated to, you know, curing cancer, then great.
Right, absolutely.
But it's that, you know, we are, our brains are learning machines. You know, that's what they love doing. You know, take a 4-year-old kid. You know, you don't have to pay a child money to learn. You don't have to, you know, beat them with a stick to make them want be inquisitive and learn new things. Unfortunately, the education system that we have in the Western world beats the desire to learn out of most people. And that's a major problem with that.
No question.
And we've got to get back. It's not the attainment of the degree or the, you know, 11 plus or whatever it is. The job of education is to make learning fun. Make it enjoyable. Make people have a lifelong desire to learn something. You know, if they're not great readers, then get them listening to stuff.
Right.
Yeah, if not great listeners, get them doing stuff. But that's where the fun in life is. You know, no one climbs Mount Everest because it's easy. You know, nothing in life that's enjoyable is easy. You know, we like a challenge. We love to put our minds to something. So be it golf, be it business, be it whatever you want, but have something that challenges you that you can then develop those skills that you're going to need.
No, you're exactly right. Yeah. And it's to do with, you know, finding that connection, finding that meaning, finding that purpose for you, because, as you said, being successful at anything takes a lot and needs a big commitment. And if it's not aligned with who you want to be and your purpose, you might run out of gas. You're probably going to run out of gas sooner than later.
Yeah.
And then what are you going to do? So, yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And that's important. And I totally agree with the education system, the failure of certainly the Western education system. It's absurd. It's sort of run sort of along Victorian.
Well, lines. It goes back to your point earlier that they're so busy on planning they forget the strategy. You know, what are we trying to do? What does success look like? You know, is it the fact that everyone gets A stars? No, it's not about A stars. You know, life isn't about A stars. You know, you come out having got A stars and expect something similar, you're going to be very disappointed. I was with on some training a few years ago with the Hungarian shooting coach. We were working with Tim Galway, the Inner Game guy. Mm. And, you know, we were doing a thing at Queen's Tennis Club in London. And we're talking about sort of, you know, talent and, you know, do we go for the best talented people? And this whole thing about is talent born, is it bred?
Mm.
And he said that they made a decision a few years ago that they were giving the scholarships to the best juniors, the juniors that had won as much as possible in their class. And then they took them into the sort of the camp to turn them into Olympic athletes, and they weren't successful. They were just losing these people. The desire and hunger to learn was just not there. So they changed their tact and they started taking on not the winners, but the ones that came second, third, and fourth. Because those guys had learned to lose. And they were still doing it, so they had the desire to learn to be better. And he said, that's what we need. It's the fact that you are talented for your age you know, doesn't cut it.
Right.
You know, because you might be the best in the under 12s or under 14s.
Right.
Yeah, but our strategy is to win an Olympic where you're going to be 23, 24, 25. So just because you're great at 13 does not mean you're going to be great at 25. If you're second and third at 12, 13, and you're willing to put the effort, 10,000 hours and continue development, right, they're the people that we can work on. And that's what we get so wrong, again, in the education system is, you know, it's all about, oh, those people that get A pluses and things like that. You know, I look back to my class and the guys that got the top marks and they made nothing of their lives. You know, it's really? People like me who sort of, you know, we did enough. You know, we weren't the leaders, but we weren't the people that just gave up because they didn't get any scores and just sort of bailed out. That, you know, learnt to actually put the effort in because we knew we weren't the most talented. Therefore, we had to put the work in to be better. So,
yeah, and I think that's exactly right. It, again, and that comes back to your passion and purpose and knowing what that is, because those are the people who put the work in. And
yeah,
doesn't matter how naturally talented you might be, you've got to have that combination of natural talent and the drive, the commitment, and the purpose. And I think that's true in any walk of life, any. Yeah, but business is important because that's going to determine a lot about your economic status and all the other things you can do in life.
It's more, I mean, it is purpose, but it's also a necessity. You know, you've got to provide an income. You know, it's the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, safety, security, you know,
right.
Then it comes to ego and, you know, self-actualization, you know, so business has that ability to deliver all of those things, you know, but it's that awareness of what your business is to you. Your business is not you. Okay. That's the big thing for anyone starting their, you know, who started their own business. Your business is not you. You are the custodian of the business for the length of time you decide to look after it. Your job is to leave it in a better position than when you found it. Same as children. You know, your children are not who you are. You know, they are their own beings, you know, and at some point you have to let them go and make their own way. And at some point you'll be dead, you know, and they'll be doing what they want to do. Same with your business, you know, and too many people hang on to their business too long. And it'll be like keeping your 40-year-old child locked up in their bedroom, you know. Well, they're probably not going to be a great contribution to society if that's been your strategy. So,
no, great stuff, great wisdom. So where can people reach you and find out more and connect with you?
The best place is probably LinkedIn. So just Kevin Stansfield, linkedin.com/Kevin Stansfield. You'll see me there, Action Coach, and obviously the author of the books. If you're interested in the books, they're both on Amazon. So the Big Dipper, How to Survive the Roller Coaster Ride of Business Ownership. Just put my name, the Big Dipper, and that'll come up. That's also on audio as well. So if anybody prefers to listen, then you can get that on audio and paperback. And then The Great Game, which is the golf book, how lessons from the great game of golf can help you win the equally great game of business. That is just on paperback. It's a very simple read. You know, it's what I call a toilet book. You know, you can take it in a toilet. After a few, you know, sessions in the toilet, you've read it. If you don't like it, you can always recycle it. So, and if you do read it, I've got some really good feedback in the UK on my book on Amazon.co.uk. One person has read my book in the US and give me a 2-star comment. So I really need some of you to read my book and give me a 5-star comment because it looks a bit sad at the moment.
Okay. Well, we better make sure
we need to get it out into the States.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time, Kevin. It's really great. I really appreciate your input here. I think it's right on the money, pardon the pun. And I love the golf analogy. I think it's really good. I personally can relate to that because that was a decision I had to make. And I said, don't have the time to spend down it. I can't do it. And there's no point doing it. That was the other thing. There was
Is
no
it?
point doing it half-hearted. Oh, I'll play once a week and, I might practice one, might go for a lesson once in a while. No, I wouldn't get anywhere that way. So I really appreciate that. Thank you
And then
so
if you
much.
do that, don't have any regrets. You can't then sort of, oh, I wish I was, fine, that's it. Other things are more important. Same with business. If you want to be small, if you just want to do that, and have a job that gives you other things in life, then great. Do it really well. Enjoy it, but don't sit there, when you're 60 going, I wish my business was sellable, because you needed on that 10 years ago when and have a strategy to actually get there. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and part of it, we probably could talk, definitely could talk more, but part of that is, what's called future discounting. People don't think very constructively about the future because it's in the future.
Again, we could have another good topic on the psychology of that one.
Yeah, and
So,
we will do. It'd be great to
but it's
have you come
been a
back.
pleasure, Howard. Thank you very much for having me on the show. And I wish all your listeners all the best. And it'd be great to pick another one of these topics and go into a bit more detail on it.
We
So,
will. We'll do that, Kevin. Thank you so much. Take
fabulous.
care.
Great to see you. Bye for now.
Okay.